Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a new study carried out by a team of international geneticists has found evidence that Iron Age communities in Britain were centred around women, with the land inherited through the female line and husbands relocating to live with their wives' community. Dr. Laura Cassidy is Assistant Professor in Trinity College Dublin's Department of Genetics, and she joins me now in the studio to tell us more about this. Good afternoon, Laura.
Good afternoon, Ray.
I love this because now we're rewriting history, aren't we? In a way.
And in a way, this was a big surprise, but in other ways, maybe not so much of a surprise if we listen to the Romans and if we look at the archaeological record.
Okay, what did the Romans say when they landed in Britain?
The Romans found British women very odd. They had a lot of comments about the behaviour of British women. Specifically, they were confronted with female political leaders, queens like Boudica and Cardimandua, who were leading armies and running around and doing all sorts of things that good Roman women tended not to do. So that was a shock. They also talked a bit about the sexual liberty of British women. Caesar mentioned them taking multiple husbands. Again, that would have scandalised a Roman audience. Crucially, with the Roman writers, there's a question of how much can we actually believe. These aren't trained anthropologists coming in, and they have their own agenda. And painting a picture of a Britain with loads of these untamed women running about, that helps them kind of paint a picture of a barbaric society that might need to be civilized.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And here we are, us Romans,
to
build bridges, roads and civilize.
Yes.
Tame the wild women. Yes.
But
this is genome, this is genetic research.
Yes.
And of course, the scientific tools available to people like yourself now are a lot more sophisticated than they would have been a while back.
Yeah, this is a brand new field. Ancient DNA has only been around for a decade or so, but it's only now we're starting to really get these quite in-depth studies of social organisation and the composition of a community.
Now, before we get into that, will you explain to people the developments then in the last 10 years? What can you do now that you weren't able to do before that?
So now we can sequence whole genomes from ancient individuals very easily, sometimes as easily as we can sequence a modern person's genome, depending on the preservation of the bone. So, and the costs have really dropped quite dramatically as well. This is on the back of like a lot of technology that's designed for the medical sphere, but we're kind of piggybacking on that.
And the bones in the middle ear, they're the best ones, are they?
The petrous temporal bone surrounding, the inner ear.
Not the inner ear itself, not the anvil, the stapes and whatever this.
You can, if you can find them,
right,
you can try them too. The petrous temporal, they tend to be easier to,
right, okay,
to find in assemblages. So, we typically target there.
Isn't that amazing, though? Just that from that, you can get the DNA, you can a picture of that person.
I know. And so much about them. And particularly like what we're interested in, obviously, is ancestry and patterns of relatedness within a community, family members, mobility, things like that. It's a whole new world that we weren't able to see before.
Okay. So what did you find then about the structures of societies then and communities?
So we were looking at one particular site in beautiful, beautiful Dorset, the countryside there. It's a chalk landscape, which is excellent for bone preservation, excellent for DNA. And the University of Bournemouth, they uncovered a cemetery, an Iron Age, late Iron Age cemetery, of many burials, unburnt. That is very rare for Iron Age Britain. So it was really a unique opportunity to look.
They burnt their dead, cremated their dead.
Excarnated, deposited in landscapes. There was a lot of other funerary customs that just aren't as amenable for like DNA studies like these. So we jumped on that opportunity. Don't know what we were expecting at the time, but when the results came up, it was sort of wham in your face that this was an extended family group, but they were all related along the female line. It was female line ancestry that was the foundation,
right,
of the social organisation of this group.
Will you explain the importance of that for our listeners then?
So, that is rare. What this basically is telling us is that in the community, women are staying put through the generations. The line of transmission is from woman to daughter, mother to daughter. But it's not a closed community. There are people coming in and there are people leaving, but they're the husbands, right? So men are marrying into the community and sons are leaving while women are staying put. That is a pattern called matrilocality.
Right. So the women are the anchor tenants, if you like.
Sort of, yeah.
Yes, yes.
And in societies that practice this type of marital
matrilocality.
Custom, matrilocality, okay. New word of the day. when we see, we only have modern matrilocal societies to go by, but if we look at these societies, we see women tend to inherit the land, right? Women have much more opportunity for land ownership, control of resources, they're more active in food production. They're really real players in the local economy and have a lot of control of right. of family finances.
So this was this a matriarchy then, as opposed to
we matriarchy. Won't go that far.
Okay, right.
No, so matrilocality does not equal matriarchy. If you're talking about it in the sense of the patriarchy, a matriarchy would be a society where women rule and men are oppressed. That's
okay,
not
okay.
what we're talking
yeah,
about
yeah, yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're
but,
talking.
Okay, well, women dominant.
It's. Women were empowered.
Empowered, right.
Relative to women
today.
In other, well.
Well, no, I mean, like, when I say
norm,
not today. Yes.
The norm when we look around the world today and in traditional societies is patrilocality. It's the opposite.
Yes.
So matrilocality predicts more, female social empowerment, political participation, fewer barriers to political leadership for women. Smaller gender gaps in education, better access to divorce, all of these outcomes that are quite positive for women.
So what you described there are better conditions for women than women are experiencing now. There's still pay gaps, poorly represented in the government.
Yeah, it's always a struggle. Yeah,
poorly represented at CEO level. You know, so it is.
Yeah, but yes.
Okay, so
we need to go back to matrilocality.
We do, but this isn't your area of expertise, but you would have an opinion on it. So what happened then? Why didn't that continue as it was?
Well, I suppose Rome invaded. We can blame the Romans. No, Roman society was much more patriarchal. The head of the household in Rome was the father. When the Romans conquered Britain, they introduced their own customs. They might have melded them a bit with the local customs, but I'm very sure that the Roman invasion would have had a big impact on British women. And then later on, we have Christianity, which doesn't have the best track record with the women.
Yeah, well, I see they gave a nun the first high-level job recently. So it's changing.
We're getting there.
More than 2,000 years on, huh? Yeah, and what about Ireland? Do we know anything about Ireland? Because this is in Dorset.
Yeah, so those signatures of matrilocality, they're widespread across Britain. We don't have any data from this period for Ireland. It seems in Ireland at the time, just the funerary rituals, cremation, excremation, we're just not finding cemeteries that we can do this type of study with.
Does it suggest a cyclical nature to, you know, over thousands of years?
That we swing in and out?
Yes.
I mean, the residence pattern where married couples live, that is a feature that is quite fluid in societies. They adapt to different economic circumstances, demographic ones. One reason why a society might transition to matrilocality is actually warfare, and particularly external warfare, where men have to leave.
That makes sense.
And go away.
So they need a base. And the base is occupied by women and they mine that. And then the men return. That sort of thing, is
it? Sort of male absence, but male absence gives women more opportunities to get involved,
and we would have seen this in world wars,
exactly.
More recently, exactly.
So there's lots of reasons. You also see for matrilocal societies, there tends not to be so much internal feuding within a territory, because if you have matrilocality, your related men, they're dispersing, they're not sticking together, they're off to different communities. If you keep big gangs of related men close together, they tend to kind of have fierce loyalty to each other and start to feud with the men of the neighbouring village over. So matrilocality seems to help kind of create a broader sense of tribal unity.
So what you're saying is if there were more female leaders in the world, maybe we would have a more peaceful world. That's what you're sort of saying, and I think I agree with you. And whenever you say that, what do people mention one name? Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Boudicca.
No.
Different type of formidable woman, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It is. And of course, history up until recently was written by men. Does that influence how we perceive
it? Of course.
Yes,
of course.
Yeah.
And it influences how we interpret the archaeological record too. I said this wasn't a surprise in some ways. There's been archaeologists saying, hey, look at this female burial, it's really wealthy. And then somebody goes, oh, she must have been somebody important's wife rather than somebody important herself. Or you see these female leaders in the Roman record, Boudica, Cardamandua, and we say, God, they must have been exceptions. And then you have to ask why. Why do we think that this was always exceptional circumstances rather than a reflection of a society where potentially women could reach political leadership positions quite regularly? So that's sort of the interest there. There's a lot we still don't know.
It must be very exciting doing what you do.
It's always surprising.
Always surprising and exciting, yeah. Right, and the genome now. So when you're saying it's cheaper and easier to achieve, what are we talking? You know, I mean, if I gave you a drop of my blood, when could you have my genome, the map of my genes ready for me?
Oh, a week or two.
Would you
a week or two. Depending for us, like if it's a good quality sample, we're talking less than, €1,000 for a genome, which is...
I don't know what I do with it then. I don't know what I do with it if I had my...
Well, you could have a look. You could have a look at your genealogy, some of your female ancestors.
Yeah, there you go. And it's going to become cheaper, obviously, as well.
Along the way. More cheaper and cheaper, which is brilliant.
So it's in Nature, is it? If people want to read the full article.
If they want to read the full thing, yes.
And there's an article in The Guardian today as well and The Irish Times. Dr. Laura Cassidy, Assistant Professor in Trinity College Dublin's Department of Genetics. Thanks so much for
coming
in. Thank you.